Hey everyone, and welcome back to Cafe Booleans. After our very, very short term break, we have reopened the cafe. Very short term break. Definitely wasn't 6 months. And we're here back essentially with our usual friends and with some new friends we've made along the way. I'm here with Alex Ferrabetta, who you all remember and love.
Oh, I heard from none of you. Not you guys.
From the audience.
All of them. Yeah.
And we're also here with Jacko. Jacko, what should we call you? What should the audience call you?
Jacko, like you've just done. Perfect.
Jacko, the single-named Jacko. That's fantastic.
Yeah, the only one. There can only be one. So you might know me as like Jackson from Paper Cactus around the place at Game Plus as well. So, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, and good to be joining you. Also know him from past Cafe Booleans episode number, I don't know what number it is, but you were on a Cafe Booleans.
Yep.
Cafe Boolean aficionados, call in and let us know.
Do you remember it was a fan favorite episode where we were talking, where Jacko was talking about programming brains in a Petri dish? Do you guys remember that?
Just your average pedestrian conversation. Yeah.
We didn't even invite him on the show.
Anyway, that feels
Jacko
very
just
me.
Burst into the cafe and started talking about brains or something.
That's a brain in a dish.
Yeah, I think.
John and I logged back in today and Jacko was still talking about it.
He never left the cafe. That's the thing. So
that's where the beard came from.
Who turned on the light?
So because Jacko is so used to the cafe now and we couldn't actually get rid of him, we've decided to add him to the show. So he's here tonight. You guys would also remember our beloved Susie and Costa. They're here with us in spirit tonight. Unfortunately, not in the flesh. Who knows about future episodes, but you know, they're here in our hearts at the very least. So
literally, because we had to eat them when these doors into the cafe were locked for the last 6 months. They drew the short straws.
And Jacko had eaten all the brains as well. So
somebody's been making horror games recently is the vibe I'm getting here. Yeah, maybe.
So I guess just to give everyone kind of a quick overview of today's episode, we're doing this kind of a half comeback episode, but also you would have hopefully heard about the slam jam that's just happened and a few people have been involved in. So first half of this episode, we're going to be doing some old style Cafe Booleans news and games discussion. In the second half, we're going to be playing some of the slam jam games, playing through those, narrating like your favorite Let's Plays. Any questions before we begin?
Full steam ahead, Gav.
I think my brain's still in that Petri dish. Yeah.
That's right. We can bring it back to the Petri dish as many times as you want. So
we can rebuild him. We have the technology. Yeah.
So first story from today. Sega teams up with an AI startup, Equus, I think is how you say it, on voxel-based generation tool so that players can generate content. And so this is a piece of news that came out from a game developer. And I believe they just announced this at a convention just like very recently. This other channel, this other company, I'm going to call it Equus. they've basically been making this AI tool where you kind of like Midjourney, you put in prompts, but instead of 2D images, it spits out 3D voxel-based monsters. And what Sega wants to do, according to this article, is team up with them so they can kind of create a streamlined tool set for both their in-house developers, but also, and this is their point they're pushing,
so they can make a good Sonic game.
We need like a horn sound. That's a industry burn. No, they're making these tools also so that their players can make user-generated content. So just before we get down into discussion, I know I said the word AI, and I know everyone's got bells ringing off in their head, whether it's positive or negative. Yes, we can talk about AI, but I also want to kind of focus this discussion a bit about the user-generated content side as well. So
interesting to see it happening. It feels like my first reaction is, okay, cool, another thing in the trend. Yep. It was a bit of a matter of time kind of thing. I am waiting till, you know, create your own cube world in 5 minutes.
Yep.
Like is the kind of like sales pitch for things. Just because, you know, I'm sick of the Minecraft reference. Let's bring it back to cube world. Why not? I think it's cool and I do enjoy it. I just, yeah, wonder what they're like, if they've really done like the market testing for it. I'm assuming they have, or if it's just like a throw spaghetti at the wall kind of thing and see if it sticks. That's where that's the angle I'd be interested in.
All right, well, how about if I quote something else Sega said in this? The importance of user-generated content is increasing in games and the metaverse.
A failing thing. And also Dreams was a thing for 3 years and then they shut the servers down.
The Dreams game that was on PS4 you're talking about?
Yeah. That's only been around like 3 years and that was like exploded at the start and then no one gave a shit.
There was I actually played that game towards the end of its life because I never had a PS4 myself and then I moved into a house with a PS4 and so I bought Dreams and I'm like, oh, this is so cool, like such a cool concept. It's all user-generated content. And I played it for about 2 hours and then I never touched it again.
I think you can't give players... I don't think you can say to them, have anything you want. I think naturally we want some kind of control. So we want some kind of like limitation. Like we want to know like you can make a cube world out of not Minecraft blocks. You can like they are your limitations. Those are your parameters. But saying, I don't know, you figure it out. Like that's what they're saying, basically. We can't get this right anymore. You figure it out. Like, I don't think... I think there is a, like... I don't know if it's what you're referring to, Jack, about the target market. There's always going to be people who are interested, but I don't think the majority of people care. I think the majority of people are either children who are going to be in on this, which is fine. That's, like, a market. Or it's, like, well, who else? Like, you know, grown-ups are tired from work. They don't really want to go home and make a game.
Yeah, or even just like in terms of that kind of creative experience, like that bit that Minecraft is trying to capture with the like the desire to go in and shape a world or do that like as a community and construct something together. There's like a bit of an open question there, I guess, as to if you like outsource that creative work to like an AI to just be like, oh yeah, and make me a monster or something like that. Or like, can you just like go and make me a house, please? Like that'd be great. Then will that get that same sense of like fulfillment and achievement for a bunch of the people playing? Without them having to do the work to actually make that. I think that'd be an interesting one because maybe for some people it's just like envisioning something and then seeing it come to reality is the thing they really enjoy. But for other people, it might be the act of like actually building it, you know, like the guy's doing woodworking on the weekends in his workshop. It's not like a, oh yeah, I just needed that, you know, carving of whatever. Like it's the act of just working the wood is the pleasurable part. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I see
it's,
that.
It's interesting. They haven't mentioned anything here about who owns the intellectual property of it as well, I suppose. Because if you think back to, you know, like Warcraft and all the custom maps that came out for like Warcraft 3, including Dota and the birth of Dota, and how when they redid Warcraft 3, it was Warcraft Reforged, they put in basically a new line in the terms and conditions that they owned everything that was made with their custom map editor because they didn't want a repeat of, this game coming out of their custom maps that ends up being even bigger than their game. so it'd be really interesting with this kind of thing, you know, whether they can claim that as IP or whether, you know, some of the stuff around AI is that you can't actually claim AI-generated content as IP as well.
I think it would be a bad move for them to do that because we already see it with Epic, you know, having the creator program for if you create stuff with Fortnite, like, you know, that's a competitor to them. And wherever they're pulling, like this AI generated stuff has to be getting pulled from some kind of library. Yeah. And it's more if it's probably going to be their proprietary library. But that's, I think it would be a bad move on their part to try and, I think the world's changed, so that won't be a good move.
Have we decided unanimously?
I mean, I'll inject a random please, positive please. Counterpoint maybe, which is that I am always interested in people exploring new things. And so I don't know if necessarily the business or like it existing in reality is like a fleshed out thing will be something that either works or is necessarily good. But there is a part of me that does like seeing people trying stuff. So I guess like I'd be interested in that regard. Just, you know, like people playing around with voxel tech is never going to get like a complete like, I hate it from me, but yeah, I think there's like enough weird caveats around it that people are like, it feels like a bit of a cynical play to a children's market kind of thing. You know, I think that's the vibes everybody's kind of getting.
Yeah.
No, I see that. If they, it depends what they're AIing as well. I mean, it says it in the article, doesn't it? That they're AIing the art. that's not the hard part. The hard part is the programming. That's the part where, like, you could say to AI, I need this, if it's voxel as well, which means it's already not 3D, like, you know, like organic 3D, all that kind of stuff. You need the AI to be able to say, you know, make this door open, lock this door at a night cycle, lock this door at night or something like that. Like, the art is not the hard, the art is the thing that is relaxing for the people to make. That's why Minecraft's so successful.
Well, Sega CEO Haruki Satomo, according to this article, believes that the use of AI will free up developers' time and allow them to perform more critical tasks than developing.
Mm-hmm. yeah, right. They also said that when we got self-serve machines at Foodland, to free you up. Like, no one's losing anything. Same day, I'm in a meeting. Yeah, so we're cutting all their hours.
Wait, is this personal experience?
And also, like, you know, it's also outside of Foodland. It's also in games and the CG industry. And yeah, we're not doing that. Guess what? We are going to do this.
Okay, look, Alex, I got to ask you. Look, don't worry. I'll keep this confidential just between us. Have you ever started a fight with one of the self-serve machines over stealing your job?
No, I used to have to fix the self-serve machines. 50-cent pieces get stuck in them so much. That's how old I am, is we don't even use money anymore. It's like a giant dryer in there, and the gears, they get stuck in the tracks, and you'd have to, like, force it out.
That's so funny.
While the person who just bought a panini stares at you, and you try to explain to them, oh, these damn 50-cent pieces, you know? Like, and they don't care.
I love the idea that, like, you say you're so old. It's like, it's like someone saying 1 cent pieces got stuck in there. It's like,
yeah, legitimately.
We haven't had those in 40 years.
Legitimately. I love the idea, and this probably echoes to all this stuff as well of AI and stuff like that, is the machines are brought in to replace us, but the machines can't fix themselves. They still need someone with fingers to go in and, you know, push that giant coin collector, because it can't handle a 50-cent piece.
AI just holding a big stick, just poking other machines. That's the future I look forward to.
A voxel AI generator that's making, like, half a giraffe, and somebody needs to go in and, like, just add the neck.
Well, that's a good point, though. That's a good point, though. And, I mean, that's often the case. Look, this is tangential, but I was talking to someone recently about kind of the AI in the music world. This is speculative, but it does seem to be the case. There are a lot of companies who say they're bringing out AI products, and, like, the AI in them is questionable, as in, is it actually AI, or is it just any form of programming that you can kind of call AI? Now, like, the Sega stuff sounds like AI, but there's definitely that kind of marketing hype thing as well, which I think possibly can backfire.
It's a buzzword. Yeah. It's like every few years or something, there's a new buzzword. So, like, I know as far as, like, government stuff goes, knowing people who work in, like, government and defense and stuff like that, like, AI is not a buzzword anymore, because, of course, there's so much more ahead of it than games and VFX. AI is not the buzzword. The last couple of years, the buzzword's been quantum computing.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, I guess, you know, VFX and that have kind of dabbled with that word quantum. Yeah. But
what was it?
So
I watched the new season of Black Mirror the other day. I don't know if you've seen that first episode where I'll try not to spoil it, but the premise involves a quantum computer owned by the equivalent of Netflix. It's like a fake Netflix. It's called Streamberry, I think. It's like one of the CEO or one of the employees at this Streamberry place calls it the Quanputer. So that's maybe going to be the buzzword that we will have to keep our ears out for.
Quanputing. Yeah. Oh, because quant, yeah. I was like, is there someone called Quan?
There we go.
Right.
To break.
That name is so dumb. I, like, tried to think of another reason why they would call it that.
Alex, it can't be that stupid.
We need the computer to help, like, calculate the joke. Yeah.
I mean, I do want to ask the question, though. Have we heard about quantum computing in games, or does it just not matter?
I don't see what it would have to do with games for the next little while. Most of the stuff, like, the big thing that's, like, jumped out at me, like, hearing about it and, like, you know, very far away, not, like, really looking at it too hard, would be, like, you know, breaking cryptography and that kind of stuff, like would really change how we think about some of those kind of things. Like algorithms that were previously like really safe and hard to compute will now become much easier. And that, you know, that was the kind of, you know, big, oh, it's going to be revolutionary and shift the world kind of stuff that was originally coming out for it. And there's probably a bunch more practical uses there, but I don't see it necessarily making its way into the entertainment industry that quickly, because like a lot of what we're trying to do really is like you kind of want a desktop or a personal device to play stuff on, and trying to do that with a quantum computer, like I'm not sure if you guys have heard of the temperature requirements for them, but yeah, you're not you're not getting that in your house.
Well, that's disappointing.
Yeah, and so actually, no, you know what, John, I don't want to rule anything out. Like, when one's available, I'll ship it to you.
Thank you.
Christmas next year, we'll see what we can do.
I want my Steam Deck powered by a computer.
Yeah, I'll talk to Gabe and we'll see what we can make happen. But yeah, I think it's basically the same thing as, you know, you'd like Google Stadia kind of mishap. You know, like I don't think that'd be like the closest thing I can imagine to it being like useful, and yeah. I don't see it too much. But yeah, I guess the only thing we haven't really touched too much about the like broader stuff is because we touched a lot on the AI part, but less on the UGC part, which I think is an interesting one. Just because I know that that's also a thing that was brought up.
That's as like user generated content, by the way.
Yeah,
for those not in the know.
Why are you looking at me, John? Well,
yeah, well, so there you go. Now you're buzzworded up as well, and you too can go into publisher conversations. That's like one of those big things about, you know, generating community engagement and all of those kind of things, and try to really make people feel like they're part of the experience that they're playing. So yeah, I think there's some genuine, really powerful aspects to that, but also I'm wary of it being a buzzword that, you know, gets bandied around just for the sake of somebody trying to say, oh yeah, we're doing this thing too.
Yeah. What's an example of a game that you think does UGC really well?
Minecraft.
Oh yeah, actually that's a great, that's a great point.
Fortnite, Roblox.
Yeah. I mean, you've even got like stuff like Dota, like the Dota skins and things like that. Yeah. A little bit like there's a bunch of them that have been done quite well. And you can see a bunch of games, for example, where like modding is kind of a reaction almost to people wanting to be able to do that. Like, even if the system doesn't support it, people will find a way. So I think there's like a natural, like very human desire to want to like extend and build these experiences. So I think there's like something there to the concept. But
I suppose like Skyrim and those games probably do it quite well as well.
Yeah. And kind of like what Jacko was saying, like people cotton on to buzzwords. Yeah. So like, you know, Starfield getting not dragged, but people not being happy with their use of the word procedural.
Yeah.
Like, you know, procedural in and still does, but predominantly back, you know, a few years ago was like cutting edge and was like, oh, this is awesome. I think in certain things, and not saying I don't know enough about Starfield to say if this is what they were doing, but like it also translates to lazy game dev. It goes like, you know, like here's a sandbox. You guys have all the power and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, but it's also just easier to get your fan base to make the content.
Yeah.
And obviously that works well for stuff like, as I said, Minecraft, Roblox, Fortnite and stuff like that, but it has to be done right. Otherwise people will cotton on if they're just being taken advantage of.
That's true. And with Starfield, not that I think this was their plan, but because I started playing it the other day, you don't have the free flying between planets on it. You essentially go into your menu and you select a planet and then it loads.
And that's one that got fixed by modding.
And it got fixed by modding within like a week.
by one guy. Whole team couldn't figure that out and the one guy does it.
Who knows? It's a conspiracy, man.
If that one guy is feeling a bit bored and wants to join a dev team.
That's great. We will talk about our next story now, which is equally as exciting and equally as relevant as every other story we bring up. So we've seen a number of video game to film adaptations recently. And I found a few headlines here just of current ones, and it kind of took me down a bit of a rabbit hole. But for example, Nintendo is now teaming up with Sony to create a live-action Legend of Zelda movie that we can...
Wait, Sony or Nintendo?
Both.
Oh,
both.
Right. Sony, yeah. Oh, right. That's hilarious.
For our users, for our audience not in the know, teaming up means working together.
Sorry, I'm not... shut up.
So you know, I can assume that was off the back of Super Mario's success, but Take-Two, who I believe the publishers for a lot of big games, including GTA, BioShock, and Borderlands, have said that. So Borderlands is getting a movie, BioShock's getting a movie, GTA and Red Dead Redemption are not getting movies because those IPs are already strong enough, making a lot of money, and it's like not worth the risk of diminishing the IP. So, so, but you know, as you can see, we've got a lot of big projects on at the moment. And I've also just included for our guests here the Wikipedia list of video game film adaptations, which is very interesting. And maybe we'll put a link to this in the description of the episode as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think an interesting way of phrasing that, because like we kind of said, oh, off the back of the success of the Mario movie, I think probably to some degree also off the back of success of Tears of the Kingdom.
Well, that is true.
The popularity that had, because that was one of those ones where like seeing that kind of permeate into mass media, you know, breaking out of kind of gaming news and seeing it more on, yeah, like that mainstream news, which means that now you've got that like broader awareness and people are like, oh, I think I remember that coming out a while back. It's one of the video games I actually heard of. Like, you know, might go see that at the movies.
Well, actually, that's
see that Zelda guy running around.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, actually. I had just made that assumption that it was like, oh, yeah, we can make movies now, which is actually a false assumption anyway, because, I mean, they've been making video game movies for the last 30 years.
Not well, but they have been doing
it. Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't know about if you guys would agree with this, but it almost seems like, you know how Marvel has like the different like eras? It feels like we're entering a new kind of like era of video game movies.
I was thinking that, yeah.
Like high quality or enjoyable or...
lots of money put into special effects. Maybe, I don't know. Did either of you see like the original Mario Brothers in the 90s or anything like that?
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Was it any good?
Like in general or when you're a kid? Oh, wait, I know the answer to both of that. No. like as a kid, it's confusing. And as an adult, it's confusing and upsetting.
Oh, okay.
You're talking about the Bob Hoskins, John Leguizamo one, right?
Let me look up on my Wikipedia list here. So the very first theatrical video game to movie was Super Mario Brothers in May 28th, 1993.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's the start of like, you know, like in like mid-2000s when they make superhero movies, there's like the comic adaption, which is like person in leotard. Mm. And then they were like, when they go to adapt it, they're like, this is too cheesy. No one's going to buy it. Let's give them this super decked out techie suit. And then now we have enough confidence to go, nah, the leotard was actually probably the right fit. We can probably just explain some things. That was like the start of that. Like they had to explain the reason why they can jump high is because they have like these like superpowered boots on. And Yoshi is like an actual dinosaur. And the Goombas are weird shrunken head lizard people. And Bowser's a human. And it all takes place in a city, like a metropolis. And Peach's dad is in it, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
No spoilers.
I'm sorry. I'm just reading the plot on Wikipedia. Is this correct? It starts off with, following the impact of a meteorite into the Earth 65 million years ago, the universe is split into two parallel dimensions. Surviving dinosaurs escape into the new dimension, evolving into a humanoid race and founding the
city. That makes sense.
I can't even get through it. Founding the city of Dino Hatton. And then, in 1973, a large egg and a rock are left at a Catholic orphanage, and the egg hatches into a human baby girl. Is that...
What about the rock? They're leaving me hanging. What about the rock? Well,
okay. 20 years later, Italian-American brothers Mario Mario and Luigi Mario work as plumbers in Brooklyn. So, and then it goes on to the actual I guess, Mario and Luigi bit. But that first bit, I did not realize was Mario and Luigi lore.
It's not.
Is it in the movie?
I can't remember. I mean, I was one when it came out. I think I saw it when I was four. Okay. And like, it was on TV. And like, my attention span now is trash. Yeah. Back then, it was so much worse. So I have no idea. I just remember like there was some pretty messed up like real effects. And you couldn't make that now.
Couldn't get away with it.
You couldn't make it with those actors either. No way could you get away with it.
I've gone and read ahead and I've satisfied my curiosity about The Rock. It becomes relevant some point way, way, way later. But up until that point, it's just like The Rock, things are happening to The Rock. I'm like, why? Why do we care about The Rock?
What does happen to The Rock?
I've been asking that same question for years. Yeah. Why do we care about The Rock? Is it the eyebrow thing he does?
Oh, yeah. Well, no. We care about him deeply. Yeah, that's that we just take for granted. We can't question that.
No, so like, let's not get confused here. We're not talking about Dwayne The Rock Johnson. We're talking about Rock Mario.
It's just The Rock at the office. I don't know how I got here.
I got family.
So have you guys seen the new Super Mario Brothers movie then?
I have. I loved it. I got chewed out at work for liking it, and I loved it, and I unabashedly loved that movie.
All right, so you would say it is better than the 1993 Mario Brothers?
Yeah, because it's the leotard thing I was saying, like the superhero thing. It's that Mario is, people won't buy, you know, people who can jump really high. And I mean, even though the movie does have some explanation to it, not really. They more just explain the magic.
You're right. I mean, it starts off with, it splits into two dimensions. I think so. They can just do whatever they want.
Yeah. It's basically, it's like, you know, all visual effects, science fiction kind of movies from like, let's say 1990 to, let's say with Iron Man, it's like 2000, what's that, 8? That is like the awkward teenage years for that kind of stuff of like, we can't get away with this. I'm going to cover myself up. You know, I have no confidence, but people won't buy it. And then we're now in the sci-fi's 30s where they're like, I don't really care. This is what I'm about. And then people were like, wow, I really dig your confidence. I like that. And then they go, yes, now how can I make money?
Okay. Well, something else I found interesting from this list, which I didn't even consider when I'm talking about film adaptations, is that Pokemon was a video game that got adapted into an anime series and then became insanely successful and then has been adapted into, I'm counting like 30, 40 movies or something.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like Japan only release kind of thing?
A lot of them have been released worldwide, but then there's also a lot more that looks like they're only in Japan, so... So I wonder what the secret is there. How do you...
Because it's still in the same format. It's an anime. A lot of these, like, you know, the game movies and stuff like that, they run the risk when they make it live action. Not to say they can't do it. It's just they have their work cut out for them. And we discussed this back in, like, when we were studying game development, like, why they're not successful. Like, traditionally, they're not successful. And it's because they usually try to base it on verbatim of a story or something like that. But like a game isn't a 2-hour sit down. It's like a 12-hour playthrough. It's more, I don't know what you'd say.
Yeah. It's a fundamentally different experience, right? Like the nature of it, like the way that people are perceiving it, like it's something you're actively participating in and needs to hold your attention in that regard. Like you can create a game that is more movie-like. Right. But then, you know, you're like going into that territory and then like trying to just fit a movie to that and like take the plot that works in a game and put it in a movie is always going to be like a little bit fraught. Yeah.
Yeah. And you got the Raka Raka twins. They're going to be doing Street Fighter. So that'll be interesting.
As a movie.
Yeah. Like they got the IP for it. They're like developing it at the moment.
Well, I suppose Mortal Kombat was recently remade. So, I mean, which is interesting. We're actually in the era of, like, essentially remaking movies. Because Mortal Kombat originally came out as a movie in 95. And then Mortal Kombat Annihilation in 97.
And then I'm pretty sure Street Fighter was a movie as well, I think.
Yeah. Oh, Tomb Raider. I didn't realize that Tomb Raider was a video game for, like, years until after it came out.
Oh, yeah. The PS1 warping graphics with the... With the old butler who'd follow you around the mansion with the tray of tea and then you'd lock him in the freezer.
I'm sorry. Is that what you were meant to do in the game or was that?
No. That's like blowing on the cartridge. Like no one saw this. None of us read this anywhere. We just knew to do it. Even though the manual said, do not blow on the cartridge. We all just did it. And then we all got online like 10 years later and was like, am I weird for doing this? And they're like, I did it.
And we all found each other.
Yeah.
It's part of the human condition.
It's a simulation. We've all done this before.
Oh my gosh. I love that. Are there any games that you guys would want to see turned into movies or series?
I would want to see Zelda, but not. I'm hesitant about it being live action. I think there's the short Terrible Fate.
Oh yeah.
The Zelda one
by Ember Lab.
That art style I think is perfect because it's pseudo realistic. Like it's not realistic at all when you look at it, but like it's enough stylized to put you in that suspension of disbelief. That I think it could do it. I think everyone kind of knows Link too well to see someone else's face kind of in there, I think is the big thing that I'm worried about.
What do you reckon, Chris Pratt?
Yeah. I mean, it has to be. I was going to say, like kind of echoing that. I feel like anything live action kind of knocks it down about a notch or two of excitement for me. I don't know. Maybe that's just the thing. Like getting celebrity voice actors in for things is like totally fine. But yeah, like it needs to retain some of that original feel of the actual like medium. Otherwise, like half my nostalgia is broken in that moment, I think. So yeah, like that's like my personal take on it. But I suspect there's probably a bunch of other people who'd be with me on that. Yeah.
And then there was, you know, the Halo series, which was,
was it
horrible?
Oh, there was too. Yeah, because Amazon came out
on Paramount.
Yeah, was it Paramount on Amazon? I remember that being Paramount. On the side of buses and everything, and then I completely forgot it existed.
Yeah, it was Paramount's like launch thing, and the writers, the news articles were like, the writers have not played a Halo game, and they're proud of it. They're like, we're rewriting the lore, horrible. Like, and it's horrible because people have that connection to the characters, and then they just go, we're doing whatever we want. And the reality is should be like, no, like these aren't your IP to do whatever you want with. There's like legally, they can do whatever they want with it. But I don't know.
Morally, ethically.
But like
we're like,
creatively.
We're changing the lead person's name to Master Chef because it's more searchable on Google.
Yeah, people can't spell chief, right? Like, I don't understand that. I don't understand how you can make a project about like such a well-known IP and then be proud of the fact that the writers haven't played the games.
Yeah. And so because I was going to bring up the point that, you know, we're talking about this mostly as like fans going to watch the movies, but you know, the one thing you can do with the movies is bring in new people. And like you said, Jacko, you know, people who maybe don't have the time to play full video games have the time to watch a movie and then they go, oh, actually I really like this IP. I want to play the games. But if it's like what you're saying, Alex, where the lore of the movie doesn't even match up with the lore of the games, then it's kind of like, it just seems like a completely lost opportunity.
And it taints it. Like it taints what you know of it, you know? Like you just go like luckily my brain just completely disregards it. It says that didn't happen. Even they said, they're like, it's not the same timeline. It's a different one.
No, that's the worst.
Which timelines are just, it's just an excuse for bad writing. Oh, it's a different timeline, you know? Oh, she just woke up at the end, you know? Like, it was all a dream. Like,
anyway. Which timeline was Click the movie on?
That was in the good timeline. That's the one where Harambe survived. I would not hear a bad thing about that movie, young man.
I'm sorry. Can we have a quick segue? I'm making a marker here on our editing. I'm sorry. Click is one of the worst movies I've ever seen because it was a good movie and then he wakes up at the end. Prove me wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Oh, fuck. No, because if I prove you wrong, I prove myself wrong. Okay, look.
Now would be a really good time to wake up.
Yeah. No, you know what? Okay, I misspoke. I apologize, John. Because by that logic, A Christmas Carol is also a bad story because he wakes up after that. But they learned a lesson. Okay.
What lesson did Click learn? I'm assuming, I can't remember what his name is. I'm assuming it's Click.
Click learned, I don't know, something about family.
He woke up in Bed Bath & Beyond. I'm sorry. And then he walked out the store.
He woke up in the Beyond.
And that's the end of the
it
movie.
It was the Beyond.
On that note, we will click over to our community notes.
A classic John segue.
Yeah, we have to bring back the segues.
Smooth.
Let me get up my community messages here. /what's on/what's happening/ get on these things. Number one is Sifter, is I think how you say it, S-I-F-T-R, has published the Aussie Games list. I think they're calling it Australian-made games list. So every year for the last few years, they've published a list of every game that's been produced in Australia. But why is this important? You can actually submit your game if it's released in the last year. So you can go to sifter.com.au. Otherwise, we'll put this link in the description and you can follow. But that's a good place to get your game listed somewhere.
I like how the blanks in the field are all just game name, Cult of the Lamb, link to your game store, like studio name, Massive Monster. It's like
so
aspirational right there.
So, and if you go back through the list, Cult of the Lamb is there. And on certain pages, they do have screenshots of the game that I think they deem the most successful. So, which, you know.
Nice.
We want to hear success stories coming out of Australia.
Yeah. So. You too could be the next default field name.
That is the aspiration though, isn't it? Moving on to one of our other community messages. We'll go to the Global Game Jam site applications are now open. So this isn't the Global Game Jam itself, so don't worry, you haven't missed out. That's happening at the end of January. But if you are a site or a business or own a large space, airplane hangar or something like that, and you want game devs to come on over, you can register your site as a site.
Yes. CDW, UniSA, AIE, whoever it is, please game do plus. It. I miss the in-person jams.
Yeah, they are good. And if you haven't done an in-person jam, keep your eyes and ears out for an in-person jam because they are a good time.
Mm.
And the third one we'll talk about is actually one from myself and Susie. So a bit of context with this one. Susie, also known as Dr. Susanna Emery, and myself, also known as not Dr. John Osman.
how many knots did you learn to tie for that degree? Yeah.
And also Dr. Sam Whiting. The three of us are running research through UniSA at the moment, also funded by APRA and the Australia Council for the Arts. And the research is that we're basically interviewing people who are involved with video game development, especially video game audio, because we want to talk to people about how both automation and AI as separate concepts, how that's affected their video game audio workflows. So if you are, you know, involved in video game audio directly yourself, or if you're a video game developer or a studio, or if you're the developer of audio software or video game engines, or if you're none of the above, but you like playing video games, you fall into our consumer category. But we would love to do an interview with you. So if that sounds like something you're interested in doing, you can email me at john.ostman, that's john.oestmann at unisa.edu.au. I'm pretty sure I got that right.
What are you finding with it so far? With your like, are you allowed to talk about it? Or
we are finding some very interesting results that will be publicly available in a report. So look, I obviously can't share anything specific from specific interviews, but look, we've done a good number of them so far, and it has been very interesting, both from research, but also just from a personal level for me, just getting people's thoughts, feelings, workflows around both AI and automation. It's been really interesting, very different perspectives on it, especially in the art and game creation world. So, yeah, but we've got plenty of spots open. So, yeah, if you're interested, just reach out. Now for the second half of this episode. If you come on over to the gaming room, we're going to play some Slam Jam games. So the first one I reckon that's worth looking at is one called Branch Manager by PSX Alex, which is, I believe, a different Alex to our Alex.
Yeah, it's not me. I mean, if the game's good, then it was me.
Well, look, I do know this other Alex, and I do know it's not you. So unfortunately, Alex, fair about it. It's not you. All right, let's see what happens here. All right. We're off to a good start. I've opened.
Oh, that's standard with the Unreal games.
I've opened the game. It says the following components are required to run Microsoft Visual C++ runtime. Would you like to install them now? Yes. So, all right, we're going through the full speed run of installing C++ components.
This is the best game trick. Unboxing that I've ever seen.
He's setting up for a frame perfect trick right here where he has to click finish just as it finishes.
I'm hovering over the cancel button.
He wants that world record.
As soon as it turns to a next button or a finish.
Yeah, high stakes here, ladies and gentlemen. But if he does click too early, we will have to do this.
Then the run is ruined.
I think this is the slowest I've ever seen it install C++ thing. He's got to restart his computer, everyone.
So
it's beautiful.
I'm really sorry to anyone who has created an Unreal game. I think Alex that might.
Yeah, it was me as well.
I may not be able to do it. If you guys want to try one of your computers,
we can try. I'm not playing my own game.
All right, let me try the next one on the list.
There's the true horror experience right there.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, this is John just cutting in here. So we did actually manage to get these games working on Alex's computer. We played through about five of them. But I tell you what, swapping between the games and trying to narrate them as we played, it was a lot more fun on our end than I'm sure it would be you guys listening to. I think the best thing you can do to appreciate these games is go and play them yourself. Go look at Slam Jam 3 that was organized by Sean. Arc Nano, thank you very much for organizing that. And also big shout out to all the games that got entered for this. Orbit by Out There Games. Why the Hell Did I Build a Switch Factory in Hell by Christopher Lavelle. Firefighter Mechs by Schneed and his team, which I was part of. And that game contains the music you're listening to right now. Dimmer Demons by Lewis or Nate. Cosmic Cattle Rustlers by Arc Nano, Dakota Suave. Gemini Stalking by Games dot by Alex.art, that's Alex Farabetta. Shadows Wake by Lucas Zigzag. Sorry if I mispronounced your name there. Blast Boost by Reese Norton. Monster Switch by Xtron. Spirit Witch by our very own Jacko. Branch Manager by Alex, which is a great doggo game. You can play basketball, you should check that out. And Despair Droids by Stout Heart Games. Go check out Slam Jam 3. Go give these games a shot. And thanks to everyone that were on these teams and contributed to that. Rather than you guys listening to it, we're just going to skip straight to the end of the episode. That is all we've got time for, unfortunately, guys. But apart from that, look, thanks for joining us on our first episode back here at Cafe Booleans with Alex and Jacko and all our other friends in spirit.
Cue the music, John.
I will cue the music again. Thanks, Alex. Catch you guys.